ようこそどうぞ、はじめまして。
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Glorio Chat, the most, actually we're not really an anime podcast this week, are we?
I mean, this is, it's basically anime, let's start.
If pro wrestling is anime, then tokusatsu can be anime.
That's a
fair... Pro wrestling is absolutely anime.
That's a fair point, fair point. So yes, as Iroh just mentioned, we're going to talk about the other big thing that we cover on the Glorio blog, and that is tokusatsu, also known as the live-action Men in Rubber Suits shows that probably most people outside of Japan know through Power Rangers, but we'll kind of get into all that in a bit here. So I don't know anything about this topic, so I will be relying heavily on our esteemed panel here to provide guidance on all things toku here. So let's do some quick introductions. I'm Gel, and we have Iroh.
Hi.
Iroh's still here. I'm not taking you for granted, Iroh. Thank you for being on. And we have our foremost expert on this topic with us, returning to the podcast, Zig.
I am responsible for getting other people on the blog into this nightmare factory, basically.
Thank you for that. And returning to the podcast after many years, welcome back, Aquagaze.
Hi.
Hello.
I tried to make my toy speak French, but it doesn't work. Sorry. I ruined the podcast now. As
I should speak French anyway.
There we go.
Let's put that. That's what it's all about, folks.
That pretty much sums it up. We can shut it down. Thanks everyone for listening.
Yep. Go watch some toy.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. So, yeah, let's. We got quite a bit to talk about, so I want to just dive right into the topic.
Sure.
As we mentioned, tokusatsu is the live-action Men in Rubber Suits shows, but Zig, you want to give us kind of a more specific definition?
Sure. I mean, like, the genre tokusatsu basically refers to any sort of live-action show that relies... I mean, the name broadly means special effects, you know, and it's any live-action show that relies on the traditional, like, Men in Rubber Suits style thing. Like, it's generally acknowledged that the first tokusatsu production is the original Godzilla, you know, which obviously the genre continues to take stylistic cues from down to this day. But as time went by, you know, as most things do, the kind of the traditional genres of tokusatsu narrowed towards a lot of, like, superhero stuff, you know. So you have Power Rangers-esque teams, you know, you've got stuff like Ultraman and Kamen Rider, but it all leans towards a very kind of like hit superhero style production, and that tends to be the vast majority of modern tokusatsu is in that vein.
Okay, so I think you mentioned a couple examples. What would be like the most notable ones then? I think we talked about the Power Rangers, but
I mean, like the two kind of like most recognizable tokusatsu franchises, if we're leaving aside the movie stuff where you have stuff like Godzilla, for example, but in terms of like regular TV stuff, it's probably Super Sentai, which everybody in the West knows as Power Rangers, the five or six or however many man band, lots of colorful spandex and posing, stuff like that. And then there's Kamen Rider, which is kind of, they're basically sister shows to each other, but Kamen Rider tends to focus on a single hero and traditionally has always been, you know, a little darker, a little more plot focused, a little bit more adult oriented. These are, especially in the modern era, these are very, very fine delineations, since they both are and always have been shows explicitly for children, with a few exceptions. You know, so those are like the big two. They're united by both being produced by the same company, Toei, They're both created by Shotaro Ishinomori, the famous Cyborg 009 creator, and they're some of the longest running shows. Kamen Rider began in 1971, although it had a long break through most of the 80s and 90s in terms of regular shows. Super Sentai's been running continuously since 1975. They're up to their 42nd wow. season at the time of this recording. So it's definitely a long runner, you know. But those are the big two. You know, there's another couple of note. You know, Ultraman is one of the earliest toku shows, and like it's been
famously produced by Toho, yeah. the guys who made
yeah,
Godzilla.
And so like,
what about Big Bad Beetleborgs?
So we'll get onto that there. But
what about Tattooed Teenage Alien Fighters from Beverly Hills and
Mystic Knights of Tirunan?
Both of those are completely Western productions and therefore technically don't count. Although there's an interesting history. But like, so Ultraman,
the R Troopers.
Yeah, Ultraman is kind of like the grandfather of the genre. It pops up every couple of years again in the form of one revival or another, but a lot of them have been very bad. That's not to say that like Super Sentai and Kamen Rider have always been good, and like the franchise sort of goes on and off of ice for a while. The other big name in modern toku is probably Garo, which has expanded out into, as we were talking about a few weeks back, anime and manga properties and stuff like that. And Garo was initially pitched as like a very adult-focused tokusatsu show. And of course, by adult, we mean lots of blood, gore, boobs, and all that kind of stuff. But the original live-action shows definitely fall into this genre. You know, it's and it's garnered quite a positive reputation for itself over the past decade.
Yeah, we've seen, at least, you know, I haven't been in the fandom at all, but from what I can tell as an outside observer, it seems to have kind of like a bit of a bump in popularity over the past couple of years. Maybe not coincidentally about when we started writing about it.
Yes.
I think it has more to do with the fact that it finally got decent fan subs.
Yeah, I mean, like toku has become more of a...
Is our official stance, fuck TV Nihon?
Let's not get into fan subbing.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think
the Glory
you know,
Blog does not officially endorse pirating or illegally downloading any. Yeah, okay, go on.
So, I think tokusatsu has undergone something of like a rebirth in interest over the past couple of years, and in the West, at least. Obviously, in Japan, it has always been a fixture, a part of the landscape. And I think a lot of that is, you know, you have the generation who grew up with Power Rangers, specifically the early iconic Power Rangers like Mighty Morphin or Zeo, kind of like rediscovering the eastern roots of the franchise, you know.
I think a lot of it is due to the fact that when people started getting back into the kind of stuff, like exploring stuff from their childhood, and like what is that stuff up to nowadays, that happened to be around the same period when the original Power Rangers stopped and they started doing reruns of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers instead of creating new seasons. So instead, everyone sort of tried to move on to the Japanese original, which was Shinkenger at the time, which was a very good show that is very acclaimed among toku fans. And I think that is sort of where the modern Western tokusatsu fandom got its big break.
I definitely think so, yes.
Power Rangers Samurai, right?
Correct, which was a very bad show. So before we go any further, we should probably explain the precise nature of the relationship between Power Rangers and its parent show, Super Sentai, which, as we've discussed, is like one of the longest running toku franchises. Basically, Power Rangers is and always has been a recut of Super Sentai. They take the fight scenes, the robot battles, all of the stuff where you can't tell that it's a bunch of Japanese dudes inside the suits, and then pair it with original Western footage. So you reshoot all of the character stuff, everything outside of the suits and stuff like that. And that's the way it always has been. You know, various Power Rangers shows either stray completely from the original concept of the Super Sentai shows, or sometimes are very close to being shot for shot remakes of them. It varies depending on the series, but it's basically, you know, a westernizing of the story or and the concept for kids in, you know, America, the States, everything like that. You know, and like Power Rangers is super important to understanding the history of Toku fandom in the West, because it is, you know, the major exposure that most people have to the genre, and it defines an awful lot of how they feel about it.
Sure, yeah. That's been alive in the past 20 years has at least knows what Power Rangers is. That was such a huge mainstream success. So yeah, that's definitely the cultural touch point for most people, I'm sure.
And I mean, like, Power Rangers itself has now run for, what, 25 odd years, you know, so in many ways it's as much of an institution as its parent show, you know. And for the record, you know, like, Toei, the original producers of Super Sentai, are completely on the Power Rangers train. You know, there's nothing underhanded or official about it. Toei will often, you know, chip in extra scenes, they'll shoot extra footage and stuff like that, you know, and they're fully involved in the production, you know. So it's a symbiotic relationship between the two shows, but like, Super Sentai is the original, it's where the idea came from, and it continues to be the one that they shoot first before recutting it into Power Rangers there.
The original Power Rangers is, like, nowhere near from the original Super Sentai.
No, absolutely not. Like I said, Super Sentai began in 1975, and I think there's... Oh, I'm trying to remember. There's, like, about 20 series before the original series that was changed into Power Rangers, yeah. Which is...
I think Zoolander was the exact 20th show.
You mean Zoolander? Zoolander is in fact a completely different show. Yes, it has been running long enough that there are a lot of shows. Some of them sound very similar.
How many dinosaur ones are there? Four or five?
There are three explicitly dinosaur ones, and then a bunch of ones that are animal themed that also have dinosaurs in them. So,
all right,
you know. But yeah, I mean, like, as Iroh has alluded to, you know, when a show runs that long, you tend to at some point come full circle and do a bunch of ideas again, you know. And because it's a kid's show and, like, the audience is expected to age out relatively fast,
in theory,
you get a lot of stuff. In theory, yes. So you get, like, a bunch of dinosaur-themed ones because young boys think dinosaurs are cool. You get a bunch of car-themed ones. You get a bunch of ninja-themed ones, you know. They, like, the show, like, can reliably circle back around to an idea every 6 or 7 years, pretty much, you know. So there's a lot of repeated ideas and a lot of repeated motifs as the years go by.
Yeah, kind of speaking of that, one of the things I always find amusing with Super Sentai and kind of bleeds into anime and all other, a lot of other Japanese media things in general, is the whole, like, set up with the Rangers with the different colors that kind of color code their personalities and whatnot. And I always found that kind of an amusing thing.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's always been, you know, like, it's a joke that, like, you know, the Red Ranger gets everything and, like, the Pink Ranger is always the girly one and stuff like that. And by and large, you know, like, Super Sentai is a show that's built on reliable foundations of cliche. So, like, the color thing has always been, like, in Japan, red is a heroic color. Therefore, the Red Ranger is always the leader. You know, like, that's something which stands relatively firm all the time. But, like, they change up the color, they change up the arrangement of colors, you know. But by this point, the franchise is so established that not only do, like, certain color combinations indicate certain personality types at this point. Like, if you have a Blue Ranger, he's almost certain to be kind of like a cool, calm, collected type who will fight a lot with the Red Ranger. You know, the colors are as much signifiers of the kind of character each Ranger is as much as just a visual thing. You know, there's a storytelling aspect associated with them as well.
Right. And I think you guys mentioned it briefly in there, but what was the original series that became like the first Power Rangers over here? The one that people are probably most familiar with?
So the original series, which became Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, is called
Kyoryu Sentai.
Kyoryu Sentai Zyuranger, or basically Dinosaur Beast Team. Sentai means team or squadron or stuff like that. There's various translations. All of them are pretty much correct there. And that was, like I said, it's somewhere in the 20s. It might be the 21st Super Sentai. And, you know, that is, it's generally well regarded in Japan, but obviously it's not seen as something completely out of the ordinary for the franchise, whereas obviously in the West it was, it is regarded as the seminal Power Rangers because it is the first one.
Start the trend of adding a sixth Ranger.
It did. So yes, that is the one thing which everybody remembers Zyuranger for, which is that it did become the first
Super Sentai show
installment. Yeah, the first installment that officially codified the idea of a sixth Ranger joining the team part way through. And obviously in the West, that became the Green Ranger, Tommy Oliver. But there's a lot of differences. So, for example, like, this is a good example of the differences between the Japanese version and the Power Rangers product. The Green Ranger dies in Zyuranger. Like, straight up, at the end of the show, he dies. And right. That is why in...
Red Ranger gets his armor, right?
Yes, and that is why that happened in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but for completely different reasons.
Right, like, I remember watching Power Rangers as a kid, like, Red Ranger gets Green Ranger's armor, and then Green Ranger, like, lost his powers for some reason.
And so these
didn't show up for a while.
And these joins were much more obvious in the older shows because they did have to write around stuff that was delivered to them in the form of the Japanese footage. So that is why in Power Rangers, Tommy abruptly loses his power and the Green Ranger stops appearing, because they just ran out of footage that they could conceivably cut in. So, like, you see that a lot in the earlier seasons of Power Rangers when they were working a lot more on the fly. And in the later series, Toei, the Japanese branch, began to take a more active involvement, and they began to produce and plan out the shows more in advance, which means that you tend to get less stuff like that. But obviously, since the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was a huge unexpected hit, they had to keep generating footage and keep generating more episodes and, like, trying to use all the footage they could. And in fact, one of the interesting little bits of Toku trivia is that Toei actually shot a whole bunch of bonus Zyuranger footage specifically for use in Power Rangers. It's not in original Zyuranger. They shot it for Power Rangers because the show was such a huge success and they needed more footage with those suits, with those robots and stuff like that. So,
because at the time Toei had moved on to the next season, as they did every year,
correct,
which is the season from which the White Ranger would eventually originate.
Yeah, and so, like, the original couple of series of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers are kind of a Franken show. Like, at one point, they're using footage from five different Toku shows.
So that's why, like, their robots suddenly changed halfway through. Correct.
So, yes, you know,
it's like we're all still dinosaur themed, but now our robots are
ninja
horses
themed.
Ninjas.
And again, this is something that gradually was phased out, because something that's worth pointing out about Super Sentai is that it is very strictly a non-continuous show. You have a team for 1 year, that is their show, and then you have a completely different team that is largely completely unconnected. You know, there's no continuous story, which Power Rangers tried to have for the first 7 or 8 seasons, but obviously it became increasingly more difficult to maintain the facade of there being a single continuous narrative. And these days, Power Rangers works exactly like Super Sentai, which is you have a team, they have their show, and then you move on to the next team, new characters, new powers, everything like that, you know. But yes, the connection between the two is fascinating, and you can see it feed back both ways. You know, there have been multiple Power Rangers references in Super Sentai over the years, particularly from some of the Japanese staff who worked on Power Rangers and then came back to the mothership, so to speak. Koichi Sakamoto, who directed quite a few recent Super Sentai shows, is an interesting example, because he worked for quite a while as a stunt coordinator on Western Power Rangers there.
where he coined the infamous back explosion.
Yes, a stylistic touch that is very typical of him, you know. And so, like, Power Rangers and Super Sentai exist in an interesting space where they are completely separate shows that happen to share footage and common elements. So, like I said in the past, you know, some Power Rangers shows are very close remakes of Super Sentai, like Samurai, Wild Force are almost beat for beat, shot for shot retellings of the Japanese story, whereas some stuff like Power Rangers RPM or Power Rangers Lost Galaxy are incredibly different and completely divorced from the original idea of the Sentai. So it's interesting to see them take that footage and repurpose it into new and interesting forms.
Yeah, I have to wonder, it's kind of an interesting study in how localization works and everything, I guess, but I have to wonder, with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, it feels to me very much a product of the times when it started in the 90s. And I'm wondering if they had, like, tried to bring the show over now in 2018 with no previous context, would they have, you know, made as many changes as they did? Just kind of an interesting...
I'm not sure that bringing Sentai over in 2018 would even be something that would be possible without the past history of Power Rangers.
That's
because
true.
The thing is, you know, like, Sentai to this day, it is a deeply, deeply camp experience. You know, like, everybody who always watches Power Rangers says, like, oh, the special effects are so bad. You can see the zippers in the suits. You know, they're clearly, like, this city is made out of cardboard, you know. That is an essential part of the appeal. You know, like, nobody is pretending that the special effects are good or that the monsters are anything other than jokes. You know, like, camp is a very stylized form of badness, basically. And that is the key appeal behind especially Super Sentai, but also an awful lot of tokusatsu in general. You know, it is not bad for badness's sake. It is bad because it follows a very particular look and feel. And I think that worked in the early 90s when people were more open to low production values in general. But in 2018, I'm not sure that, like, if the idea of Super Sentai had come over to the West right here, right now, that you could have done it without being laughed out of the building, because it's still cheap looking and it's still very...
Making it all big budget Hollywood.
Yeah, you know...
Not sure if that's true, because, I mean, if you look at nowadays at children's TV programming, like mostly live action TV programming on Nickelodeon and the Disney Channel and stuff, it's all still very overacted, campy, cheap, cheesy. That stuff still appeals to children, I think. So I wouldn't entirely write Super Sentai off in the 21st century. I know.
I mean, what I was saying was not necessarily a reflection on the quality of the product. You know, I still find it entertaining, and I'm sure children everywhere would. But it's the business reality of the situation, you know. I'm not saying that you couldn't put Super Sentai in front of a kid in 2018 and they wouldn't love it. The continuing success of Power Rangers is a testament to that. But, you know... it's very difficult to make the business case in 2018.
An exec wouldn't sign off on it in 2018.
Exactly. I think that's the key difference, you know, because, you know, even at the time, it was intended as completely disposable fodder programming, and I don't think it would even reach that in the minds of many people now at this point. So it's difficult. It's tricky to say, you know, but fortunately, because Power Rangers does have that cultural foothold, it has been able to come back time and time again. The show has actually been cancelled 5 times, and every time it keeps coming back. Like, part of that is because it's incredibly cheap to make, because half of it is just footage you're taking from another show, obviously. But
and the other half of it is New Zealand.
Yes, there is a long history of Power Rangers just filming in New Zealand, because it is much cheaper than doing it in the United States. And this leads to an awful lot of people with extremely bad American accents, let's say. But, you know, for better or worse, you know, the two are inextricably bound at the hip. You know, like, the reason why we've talked so much about Power Rangers so far on an episode that's meant to be about Japanese tokusatsu is because to many people it is the most visible representation of this style of television, of this style of entertainment making in the Western world.
Except maybe when you watch Doctor Who in the 70s.
I mean, like, Doctor Who is classified as tokusatsu in Japan because it fundamentally is the same thing. It is special effects-driven television, you know. So Doctor Who is an example of a show that would be classified as tokusatsu had it been made in Japan. So that's actually a pretty good, you know, reference point for the broadness of the term.
It is about the same level of production quality, sure. At least pre...
I feel like 1970s Doctor...
The pre-modern Doctor Who.
As a connoisseur of old Doctor Who, I feel like the special effects in old Doctor Who are way worse than anything you would have seen.
That's probably fair.
But probably there's some real wobbly walls going on there. But yes, so, you know, Sentai is... a part of the Japanese cultural makeup at this point. You know, the fact it's
still going.
Parodied and referred to endlessly in other shows, you know, like in the most unlikely things, like there's a Sentai joke in Carnival Phantasm, isn't there?
I thought you said no fate talk.
No fate talk.
But yeah. It's a Tsukihime sketch, we can talk about it.
Iroh found a Type Moon loophole.
You know, like the biggest toku series is most notably Godzilla, of course, which has become kind of like a Japanese icon of filmmaking and storytelling, but also Super Sentai and Kamen Rider have become like omnipresent tropes in Japanese media. So like in the West, when we want to depict that someone is a superhero, you know, we have them wear an emblem on their chest or a cape because we think of Superman, you know. But in Japan, if you see somebody, you know, wearing a scarf, that's almost certainly a deliberate Kamen Rider reference, because that is how deeply ingrained the idea of the show is into the, like, the Japanese cultural psyche. You know, they are...
Scarves are cool.
Yep, scarves are cool. You know, scarves are very cool.
See also belts and helmets with antenna on them.
Yeah, anything which makes you look like a grasshopper.
But, yes.
Yes.
We'll get into the Kamen Rider stuff in a minute here.
Yes.
Just as far as the Super Sentai goes, is that original one that the original Power Rangers is based on considered like the best, so to speak, series?
No, and like it's because, as we said, you know, there have been 42 Super Sentai up to this point, and like anything with that long a history, you know, you will see vastly differing opinions on what the best is, and, you know, it depends on what people want out of them. You know, it's always worth bearing in mind that they are made as children's entertainment, and therefore they are not particularly deep or attempting to tackle, you know, particularly heavy themes there. But there are as many opinions on the best one as there are fish in the sea. There's a few that pop up a lot of the time. Jetman, which is the show immediately before the show that became Power Rangers, is very popular. Samurai Sentai Shinkenger, which Aqua mentioned earlier, is generally regarded as one of the very best of the modern shows. You know,
written
but really,
by Yasuko Kobayashi, the writer of Garo, the animated series, and also JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, the anime.
The anime, yes. Kobayashi has a long and proud history in tokusatsu. She's written a lot of good stuff. But yeah, you know, there's no consensus pick for the best show because the shows are kind of criticism proof, you know, like the best parts about them are not necessarily the kind of things you go in to critique a show about. They're very broad and very simple pleasures, you know. So there's a few which the fandom tends to hold out as classics, but there's not really a consensus pick. What I will say is that in the same way that whenever somebody in the Western media references Power Rangers, it's almost always a reference to the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. When Japan chooses to reference or homage Super Sentai, they almost always reference the very first show, Himitsu Sentai Go Ranger, which is from 1975. So that is almost always the one that is the target of parodies or, you know, references, loving homages, anything like that. But beyond that, there's not a consensus best pick. There's a few shows that maybe the fandom is not super fond of, but largely, you know, and again, I'm speaking mostly from a Western perspective, of course, you know, I don't know huge amounts about the fandom in Japan there, but it's not really a show where there's a huge amount of critical battling over what's the best and what's the worst.
Right. But I think it's a very valid point to discuss, like, what is the appeal of this? Why would an adult watch this? And I think Zig kind of hits the nail on its head there when he said that it's sort of above criticism in that it appeals to the child in you with its imagination. Like when Toku is good, or when Super Sentai is good, I wouldn't exactly say the same thing about Kamen Rider. When Sentai is good, it's not because it has poignant character moments or something like that, but because it's just so out there that you can't help but have a great time. Like, this monster is stealing children's birthdays by literally showing up at the party and stealing all the gifts, and this is treated as like the most vile, heinous evil there is in the world.
Stealing their birthdays! Who does? No,
I mean, pretty bad.
You have to be so evil to steal a birthday.
And that is just like the sheer imagination, the sheer, I think, even shamelessness that goes into this. It's sort of comparable to why a Platinum game is entertaining, or why JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is entertaining. It's just the out there-ness and the extreme sincerity with which it does it. That
it's a spectacle.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, part of the spectacle is that they are trying to do things that they should not attempt with the budget and constraints that they have, you know, but they are trying so hard, you know, like there is a, like I said, you know, a huge amount of the appeal of tokusatsu lies in its camp value. And camp is a very stylized form of filmmaking in this case, you know. So even though the things you're seeing and doing are not remotely realistic, you know, and are very obviously the product of extremely basic special effects work, there's a verve and there's a like a big day glow brightness to them that is very appealing, you know, visually and, you know, on a thematic level, you know, like, it's a very simple world. The good guys are good, the bad guys are bad. You know, you can blow up monsters without any fear of moral repercussions because they're monsters. You know, like, you can
destroy the city without any fear of any casualties.
Yeah, yeah, nobody ever dies. Well, sometimes, but like,
except when Uruguchi is writing.
Yeah, but like, you know, it's a pantomime, you know, it's a very bright, appealing pantomime where everybody gets what they want. And I think that that's a very key part of the appeal.
Yeah, I definitely understand the appeal from that regard. Those are all valid points. As far as criticism goes, though, I may have a few things to say about the current airing series, which you guys made me watch the first episode. And well, I, you know, I don't even have the title. What is the actual title of the series?
So the actual title of the series is it is the first ever series where there are two Sentai teams going up against each other. So this has happened in movies before. Like, pretty much every crossover movie is how could we make the two teams fight, but this time they've done it as an entire series. So it is Kaito Sentai Lupin Ranger versus Keisatsu Sentai Pat Ranger, which is basically
Dawn of Justice.
Yeah. Thief Sentai Lupin Ranger versus Police Sentai Pat Ranger. So one team are thieves trying to steal stuff, and the other team are the police trying to stop them.
I mean, it's, let's be honest, it's basically Persona 5.
Yes, there's a lot of that. And, like, it's a good, like, chance to bring up the idea. Sentai has always shamelessly chased the zeitgeist because it is a show made to sell toys. Like, it is very important to establish that the primary purpose of most television tokusatsu is to sell toys. You know, it is Transformers, it is G.I. Joe. You know, it is a feature-length toy commercial. That's not to say it can't be better than what that suggests, of course, you know. But, like I said earlier, Sentai shows are inevitably themed around what young boys find cool. And although there is a sizable female fan base, it's always, you know, a young boy's thing that they're targeting.
So next season we can expect Let's Play Sentai YouTube Ranger.
I wouldn't be surprised. Christ,
the entire team is
The time seems
building
right.
Building stuff on Minecraft, and then the monsters come out of Minecraft or something.
I mean, like the show before the last show, Zhuoja, actually had a distinct Minecraft sub-theme.
Right.
There was a lot of blocks and cubes going around and stuff.
You're right.
But yes, you know, like the shameless, thirsty commercialism of Sentai is just an inherent part of the show. It is baked into the very DNA, you know. And so, you know, Japan has always loved the Phantom Thief idea. You know, like, you've got Lupin the Third. They have a fascination with all that kind of stuff. Persona 5 has made that stuff hot again. There's a new Lupin series. So it seems like the perfect time to cash in on that, so to speak. And the police are always cool because they have cars and guns and all sorts of stuff, and they're heroes of justice and all that kind of thing. So you smash those two things together, you get a marketing machine.
I think that more than even Persona 5D, Kaito or Phantom Thief is just one of these stock characters that is popular with young boys in Japan. Just like what cowboys or pirates or ninjas are to us.
By the way, all of those things have been Sentai teams.
Yeah, not cowboys. Are there cowboys Sentai? I don't think so.
The sixth Star ranger Ninja. In...
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Cowboy Ninja.
He used a hamburger to transform. That's how much of a American he was, despite the fact he was obviously played by a Japanese dude. But yes, you know, like Aqua points out, you know, like, it is just... what do children think is cool? Let's make a show out of that. So as I said before, you know, some stuff keeps popping around. There have been multiple dinosaur-themed shows. There have been multiple car-themed shows. There have been multiple ninja-themed shows, because these are cool things that kids like. And so that stuff keeps popping up again and again. And this is just a logical extension of that.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. Well, yeah, that sounds like a pretty good summary of it all. Have you guys been keeping it up with the current show?
We have, yes. I mean, like, I'd like to hear what you think, Joe, because...
Did it get better than the first episode?
It's, like...
Okay, so I should probably say, I have, you know, we talked about how camp is part of the big appeal of this.
Yes.
And I get it to a certain extent. I appreciate some camp here and there, but I definitely have a much lower tolerance for it than you guys. And... just, you know, even from my background, like, when, you know, I'm an old man, so when Power Rangers came out, I was, like, just about hitting the age where it was not cool to watch it.
Yeah.
And before, and not old enough before it was cool to watch it again.
What's a dumb kid shit?
So I never really kind of got
you were not cool enough. You were not cool enough to watch it ironically, basically.
Right. So, yeah. You know, I never got into it from that angle, and then it's just kind of harder for me to get into it now, I think. So yeah, watching that,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, watching that first episode, like, it was pretty funny just from the perspective of how, like, bad the production is and everything. And, like, I don't want to, like, I don't want to be mean-spirited about it, because, like, they're clearly just, like, so into it. So, like, I can appreciate and respect what they're doing, but, man, just, like, the acting and, like, some of the CGI explosions and the fact that they're shooting guns that are literally toy guns that, like, came out of a Happy Meal or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little much for me to personally stomach, but,
yeah. And I mean, there has been kind of a sharp divide in people's feelings about, especially, the heavier use of CGI in the recent shows, because a lot of the CGI doesn't look stylishly bad. It kind of just looks bad, you know, and a lot of people prefer the use of models or men in suits or stuff like that. So it can be very difficult to adapt the idea of a look. And it's worth pointing out that Super Sentai first episodes are always like insane sugar rushes, because not only do they have to hook a new audience comprised of people with the shortest attention span on the planet, but they've got to introduce all these new toys, all these new concepts, and like get everything in there so that even if you only watch one episode, you want to buy everything, you know. So it's a lot to take in, for sure.
I think I was mostly just annoyed by the Red Ranger not being able to like act at all. Like, was he kind of like...
Yeah, I was just about to ask, like, is your problem with the Sentai tropes or just with the Japanese drama tropes?
Because I don't...
The acting, the low budget, a lot of that
is
just,
I don't think I've watched enough.
I mean, I'm not trying to say, like, you just don't get it, like, obviously. I mean, yeah. I think that might be an even bigger entry barrier than the camp of Toku is just like the inherent camp of Japanese live action drama.
Yeah, I can't say that I've watched a whole lot either. So like, I guess it's kind of a culture shock in a way. I've watched some other live action. Like, I just recently checked out the
Kakegurui
live action. And
I saw the intro Dari for that. That thing looks terrible.
Starring a notable Kamen Rider alumni.
Yeah, I did find that amusing for one episode. And then, like, I have not had the desire to watch it again. Just in seeing how they translate. But that was kind of like, I wanted to see how they translated the material to live action, I guess. More the curiosity of that. And I mean, to be fair, Kakegurui by itself is also very campy and relies on that. So I like kind of understand the appeal to it, but I guess my long term enjoyment out of it, it's probably mostly just a matter of opinion on it, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, like, for what it's worth, the people who play the lead characters in Sentai are normally like idols or singers or stuff like that. You know, they are not career actors. They are cast for being extremely attractive and like their ability to say a lot of this stuff without cracking up in the process. There, you know,
there is virtually no such thing as a career actor in Japan.
I suppose you're right. Yes,
I think the butler man in Lupin Ranger is like a famous character.
There's no such thing as a career actor under the age of 50 in Japan.
Yeah. And like, it's worth pointing out that like Sentai knows where to put the talent, because they will normally cast extremely big names as the voice actors for the villains, the only characters who actually need any sort of character given to them, so to speak. So like, you know, you name a prominent Japanese voice actor, especially if they're male and slightly older, and chances are they have been in Super Sentai at some point. Joji Nakata's one of his first big roles was voicing the villain in Sentai. Jun Fukuyama, all that kind of stuff. You know, there are some real big names on that side.
Haruka Tamatsu.
Yeah. Rie Kugumiya, who is in this show, in this current airing season, you know. But, yeah, you know, like as Aqua says, I think part of that is just the very different way that Japanese drama operates. But yes, like, the acting is bad. It's not what you come to the show for, you know. Again, I compare it to a pantomime or a cartoon. You know, you just need people to emote in the most over the top way possible. It's not the quality of the acting, it's the amount of acting.
Quantity,
if you have
quality.
Enough acting, then nobody will notice that it's terrible.
Yeah. All right,
the theory, you know.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, for me, I think it's a matter of taste at that point. You know, I understand it. But I just personally have not been able to get into it, but I know I can definitely see the appeal.
Yeah, I mean, it's understandable. You know, you do need to approach it with a relatively juvenile mindset, because right. At the end of the day, as I keep iterating, you know, it is a silly kids show, and some people will enjoy that and some people will not, and I don't hold it against anybody who finds it very difficult, because it is not a show with like deep and mysterious rewards that you can keep going back to. You know, the pleasures of Super Sentai especially, but an awful lot of tokusatsu, are very surface level, and sometimes it's a very fine line between laughing with the show or laughing at the show. they generally walk it relatively well, but sometimes you do just laugh at the show. And that's not necessarily malicious. It's just when they try something that is so obviously beyond their ability to handle that sometimes all you can do is chuckle at it, right. Really.
He stole that kid's birthday, man. He stole that kid's birthday.
By shooting a birthday beam at him.
I mean, that's how stealing birthdays work.
Yeah, you shoot the birthday beam, and then you blast off with your rockets.
I think that pretty much sums up the entirety of Sentai in one sentence.
One more thing, if you want to watch Sentai but you don't like Japanese drama, watch Power Rangers RPM.
Power Rangers RPM is an extremely good show that is not much like a Sentai, to be brutally honest, actually. It is very different, but Power Rangers RPM is perhaps the closest they have ever got to integrating the Sentai concept with good characters and stories and stuff like that. And even then, it's perhaps a little bit on edge. But yes, shout out to Power Rangers RPM, which is an extremely good show and is way better than the Sentai it is based on.
All right, cool. So let's we'll put a bow on the Sentai discussion and we'll move on to the other big series that we wanted to talk about, and that, of course, is Kamen Rider. Not as high profile in the West, perhaps, but I know it has some of it has been carried over, right?
Masked Rider.
As Masked Rider.
Yes. There have been two separate attempts to bring Kamen Rider to the West. The first one was done in the white hot heat of the post Power Rangers era, where everybody was adapting everything they could get their hands on. So as Iro mentioned earlier, Big Bad Beetleborgs, also a Japanese show into English. But Kamen Rider was adapted as Saban's Masked Rider, and it was very bad, but that was not necessarily the reason that it didn't succeed. There just is not as much instant iconography to Kamen Rider as there is to Super Sentai. You know, with Super Sentai, you have the team of friends, you have the colors, you have the very goofy monsters. Kamen Rider as a franchise has generally tended towards being more self-serious. Now, this is on a sliding scale, of course. You're still talking about Starfish Hitler and kicking monsters so hard they explode. But the difference is, whereas Super Sentai tends to take itself not very seriously at all, Kamen Rider normally takes itself very seriously. Speaking of which, there was a second attempt to localize Kamen Rider, which was a show called Kamen Rider Dragon Knight, released back in 2004, which was actually pretty good, but was completely overshadowed and did awful ratings. And so that's a shame. But you mentioned in the West that it's far less iconic than Super Sentai, but in Japan it's the opposite. Kamen Rider is the iconic tokusatsu franchise. It's the one, you know, it is the one that everybody knows, the one that everybody will reference. Like I said, you know, its tropes have seeped into Japanese culture to a greater extent than any other
tokusatsu. Even if there is no God or Buddha, there will always be Kamen Rider.
Yes, to put it simply.
Yeah, so you mentioned that while Super Sentai has been running nonstop, so Kamen Rider actually has a pretty big gap.
There's a number of large gaps in Kamen Rider, and it's interesting because even though it is by far and away the most iconic franchise, its production has been somewhat stop-start over the years. So originally, the original Kamen Rider show, which is just titled Kamen Rider, began in 1971. And then there was a series of Kamen Rider shows which ran pretty much from there up until about 1981. There's five or six separate series there. Then there was quite a long break between regular series until 88, where there were 87, sorry, where there was a revival called Kamen Rider Black, which was hugely popular and very, very iconic, and is one, even today, regarded as one of the best Kamen Rider series. And then there was another big break from 89 till 2000. And during this time, you know, the property did not die. There were a bunch of movies and stuff that were their own separate continuity. But basically, Kamen Rider was largely on ice until 2000 when they revived, when Toei revived the show into like a new generation of Kamen Rider. And to separate these two shows, they're normally called the Showa Kamen Riders and the Heisei Kamen Riders after the eras of Japan during which they were produced. And the Heisei eras began in 2000 and have run through to the present day. And since that revival, they have adopted the Super Sentai formula, which is one show every year, no continuity, new riders every time.
Right. So what are like kind of the key differences here from the Super Sentai? Like you mentioned, there's not a team, right? There's only one.
Sure. Yeah, so the biggest difference here is that
increasingly less
as time has gone by, yes. But for the most part, Kamen Rider is only focused on a single titular rider, you know. And there will be support teams, there will be other riders, you know. But there is not the same concept of a team of equals. Kamen Rider is largely focused on a single title character there. And as time has gone by, as Aqua has alluded to, they have introduced second and third riders, and there have been some rider shows which are based around the idea of multiple Kamen Riders normally fighting against each other. So this again is a trope that has become increasingly prevalent in the modern series, and that's because, of course, the more riders you have, the more toys you can sell. But for the most part, we're looking at a show with a smaller cast than Super Sentai. You've got one main character, perhaps a supporting rider, you know, which is something which dates back all the way to the very original show, and then maybe a bunch of civilians or support characters.
Right. You're not
I think it's interesting.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I think it's interesting to mention that from, I think it's like 2010 onwards, they have been having this thing they call the Neo Heisei era, which is when they sort of established a number of tropes that would continue to go on until the present day.
Yeah, and
I think a part of that is like more riders, more toys, but also there's a very strict sort of arrangement of the cast. There's always the rider, and then the rider always has his buddy, and then there's a second rider who's a bit of a rival, and there's a girl, and there's a mentor. And like every single Neo Heisei era show has these roles, except for the ones that explicitly try to defy it, like Gaim.
Yes, and like the reason I didn't use the Neo Heisei nomenclature is because it's not an official term, whereas the Showa and Heisei era division is officially endorsed by Toei. The Neo Heisei stuff is mostly a fan thing, but Aqua is absolutely right. Beginning in 2009, they sort of reorganized the way that Kamen Rider shows work and put them onto a slightly firmer formula. And since then, they have become increasingly like Super Sentai, spins on existing formulas rather than diverging greatly from a central idea.
Right. What series did that start with then, in 2009?
So the first series that is acknowledged to have begun that is a series called Kamen Rider Double, which is written as W because that's how the Japanese pronounce the letter W. But this was sort of a gradual thing, you know. It's more the idea of, like, I hate to say it's the show's becoming more overtly commercial, because the thing has always been a huge commercial thing, you know, again, to sell toys. But there was definitely a concerted effort to kind of like streamline and formula, like adopt a formula which a lot of the shows followed subsequently, and that has continued up to this point. You know, that
it is, for instance, since the Neo Heisei era onward, that there is always a new like collectible that they can put in gacha machines. Yeah. Like you had the Gaia Memories and Double, the coins and O's, the switches and Forze. So yeah, like it's like a gacha toy that is like has become one of those firmly entrenched tropes of the Neo Heisei era.
Yeah, Aqua's correct. And again, that's what I was talking about when we talk about a move towards more commercial footing and a more Super Sentai style toy kind of like front and center stuff. You know, that's not necessarily affected the quality of the shows. There are still some very good shows there, but they are certainly more homogenized than they once were.
So speaking of good shows, I know for me, I kind of became somewhat more aware of Kamen Rider when Gaim came out, which had probably the peak crossover with anime fandom and toku in because of the writer.
Yes.
Is that a good place to start, or is that the worst place to start?
It's where I started.
It's tricky. So the aforementioned crossover Joe is talking about is that Kamen Rider Gaim was written by Gen Urobuchi, who, for those of you who are unaware, is a very famous anime writer who wrote Fate Zero and Madoka Magica, and also Saya no Uta, Song of Saya, the visual novel. He's generally regarded as a writer who is very big on, like, dark...
It's psychopaths as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he did do that, didn't he? That show was bad. but, like, you know... And this was seen as an odd matchup at the time because Urobuchi is very big on like dark, psychologically complex themes. You know, like he's also infamous for using quite liberal amounts of gore and violence in his work, which obviously runs completely against the idea of like a happy-go-lucky kids show. So Gaim is an interesting case in that it's one of the few tokusatsu shows which actually works as a complete narrative. You know, like it has characters, it has depth, it has motivation, it has, you know, beyond surface level characterization. And in that sense, it's very good, but it's also sometimes an awkward fit with, you know, the goofy stuff. Like that show was fruit. Yeah, that show was fruit themed and they all transform into giant fruits and stuff like that, you know. And and so it's a very odd clash, you know, like as a standalone show, Gaim is one of the best tokusatsu shows ever, but it is very uncharacteristic of what tokusatsu or especially modern Kamen Rider is in general. The idea of this serialized narrative that is predicated largely on character dissection and discussion and like very strong human psychological ideas is completely against what normal Kamen Rider is. So it's not necessarily the one I would suggest that you start with, especially because one of the things it does is it subverts the tropes of older Kamen Rider shows to make points, and you won't necessarily understand that if you haven't seen older Kamen Rider shows before. It's a superb piece of media, but it's not perhaps where I would choose to start if someone was looking to get into Kamen Rider.
I mean, it is exactly the same. I mean, this it's because it's like this because it's an Urobuchi show. You wouldn't recommend Madoka Magica as someone who wants to get into the magical girl genre. I guess it's sort of just part of his inherently, and I know this term is incorrect, deconstructionist take on writing, in that he averts tropes, cemented tropes of very classic genres in Japanese pop fiction and plays with them. So it doesn't really like represent the core appeal of toku at all, I think.
Yes.
Which is why Gaim can still be watched by people who are normally not into toku.
I mean, it is very obviously an Urobuchi show before it is a Kamen Rider show. You know, like he grudgingly adheres to some of the tropes, but it definitely feels like, you know, stuff like the new power-ups and the monster of the week and stuff like that. It definitely feels like he is being held back by those rather than, you know, embracing them. So it's a fascinating show, and I cannot overstate how good it is. It is very, very good, but it is not necessarily the show I would use to introduce people to Kamen Rider because it is just so different from all the other shows that bear the same name.
Yeah, I get the impression that somebody could watch it and say, oh, this is great, and then start going to watch other Kamen Riders and kind of be disappointed chasing that particular type of show.
That's what I've caught through.
In terms of the actual quality of the writing, like no Kamen Rider show has ever come close, you know. And it's an even more jarring transition from something like Gaim to Super Sentai because unlike, you know, the traditional thing has always been that Super Sentai is super bright and jolly, and like Kamen Rider is like the darker cousin. And that's not really true, because especially the modern Kamen Riders are often just as goofy as Super Sentai, but they do attempt to have stories and narratives that are more complex than what you would find in a Super Sentai show. You know, like there is an attempt at a cogent year-long story. Some are better than others, some are not great, but it's definitely a more story-focused, more character-focused series overall than Super Sentai, and that's generally because you have fewer characters and fewer power-ups to focus on.
So if Gaim is not necessarily the best example of what you come to Kamen Rider for, like, what would be a good, like, kind of classic type of series for people who are into the, you know, the whole big campy toku thing, and that's what they're looking for?
I mean, I've got a couple of suggestions. I mean, I'm sure Aqua has some stuff to say as well, but generally I would avoid the Showa era 70s stuff, because although it has like hugely iconic value and it's fascinating to see, it's generally pretty bad, like most 70s television is. You know, like it is even more shoestring budgety and even more formulaic than most of the modern shows, you know. And obviously, you know, bar occasional incredible highlights like Starfish Hitler, which is a real thing. You can Google it.
Is it exactly what it sounds like?
It is a starfish who also looks like Hitler. Put a picture in the show notes, but it is absolutely a real thing.
Our episode title.
Like a lot of that, of Japanese media of that era, there are a lot of overt like Nazi references in a extremely tossed off comical way. The two Kamen Rider shows I would probably recommend for somebody looking to get into the genre are both relatively modern. The first one I would suggest is probably Kamen Rider Denno, which was the 2007 show and was written by the aforementioned Yasuko Kobayashi. It is a very good, very funny ensemble character piece that's kind of pretty lighthearted by Kamen Rider standards, but it's got a good combination of good, broad, funny characters, a decent plot that sort of falls apart a little bit, but is still relatively compelling. And it's got a neat series of power-ups and different forms, which are good fun and like really cool looking. And the other one, which Aqua has already mentioned, is Kamen Rider Double, which was the first of the so-called Neo Heisei shows, and again has a great cast, a very personable, likable cast. It's relatively stripped down in terms of story and like characters compared to more recent shows, which have tended to go a bit over the top. And it's just a very good, solid story told without too much flash or marketing bullshit around the edges. So those would probably be my two recommendations. Aqua, did you want to add anything to those?
I just want to give a shout out, I think, to Forze, which is technically, I would recommend that you watch the first three Neo Heisei shows in order, because they are loosely connected and they have very good like crossover movies where they all hang out with each other and blow monsters up. But Forze is interesting for Western audiences because it is essentially a Japanese take on the cliche American high school. So it is set in high school, but the high school is incredibly steeped in American tropes. So there are the jocks, and there's a goth, and there's a cheerleading squad with a popular bitch girl. And the main character, Gentaro, who is also the Kamen Rider, obviously, is basically this comical Grease-style delinquent whose goal is to befriend everyone in the school. So it's basically 50 episodes of him interacting with these colorful high school caricatures and basically saving them from drugs that turn you into monsters that are also being peddled by the school staff.
It's a very broad, cartoonish, extremely fun Kamen Rider show. You know, like Kamen Rider shows tend to veer from like quite dark and serious to relatively lighthearted, and this is like the most lighthearted of them all. It also contains the single most important factor for any decent Kamen Rider show, which is people getting tied to crosses.
I did not see that one coming at the end of that sentence.
Yeah, that there is a lot of people getting tied to crosses in various Kamen Rider shows, even up to the present day, and it is always hilarious, no matter when it happens.
So we've got Hitler crucifixion. Sounds like a fun kid series.
You know, all that stuff.
I think I would also like to mention Kamen Rider Drive, which is essentially what if Knight Rider, but Kamen Rider. So it's about a cop who has a cool talking car, who is definitely not a Japanese Tony Stark, who turns into a belt, who turns him into Kamen Rider. And it's basically just a fun, like, sort of crossover between the very familiar genre of procedural police drama, comedy, and the very weird out there genre of Kamen Rider Tokusatsu. And it has good villains, it has fun characters, it has like the only good romance in all of Kamen Rider ever.
It's another show that benefits greatly from a very strong ensemble cast.
Yes, I would say. And unlike maybe the other ones, it's a bit more standalone-y. It's not, I wouldn't say it's as good as the Double Or Forze, or Gaim for that matter, of course, but it is more standalone-y. So that might be a good gateway series for people looking to get into Kamen Rider.
Yeah, I can definitely appreciate that. I always feel that Drive is kind of overlooked because it was the series which came after Gaim and sort of reverted back to the traditional franchise tropes. So
indeed,
in some ways it was always destined to be a bit of a letdown, but it's a very solid show and one with an extremely likable cast of characters.
Yeah, kind of the unfortunate follow-up there where you had all the I'm sure you had a lot of crossover anime fans looking for their next hit and being somewhat surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's absolutely not the same kind of thing. You know, like I said, you know, it was, I'm sure a lot of people fell off very fast because for better or worse, it does return to the traditional franchise style.
Right. So where are we at with the series right now? What's the current airing series?
So the current series is called Kamen Rider Build. And
about halfway now?
Yeah, we're about halfway. It's worth pointing out that for both Super Sentai and Kamen Rider, shows are a year long. Which, when you take into account various breaks and Christmas and Golden Week and stuff like that, means a series is normally anywhere between about 46 to 50 episodes, usually. So we're about halfway through the current show for Kamen Rider. We just had episode 24. Episode 25 aired last week. And it's an interesting one. You know, it's... So I'm going to go on the record and say that I was not a big fan of either of the past two Kamen Rider series, Kamen Rider Ghost or Kamen Rider X-Aid. And they definitely
all agree to that, even though the general Western anime seems to agree that X-Aid was good, but we didn't really see it.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I think we gave it a fair chance, but...
Yeah, I mean,
X-Aid was the video game one, right?
The video game Doctor one, yes. And like X-Aid brings up a good like problem with a lot of these shows, which is a lot of people have told me it becomes fantastic about a third of the way through. But the problem is a third of the way through is about 15 episodes.
Yeah, that's a big ask.
That is a huge ask, you know. And so the problem is sometimes you will get shows that start very slowly and become good. I think Drive had that issue.
Drive is an example. Like the back. But Drive is not insufferable in its early episodes like X-Aid was.
So, like, let's just say that a lot of people liked X-Aid who stuck with it, but like we bailed considerably before that. We watched like 8 or 9 episodes and gave it a fair chance, you know. But
we watched the Dr. Pac-Man film.
Yes. where the Kamen Riders fight evil Pac-Man. And again, I'm not
that was literally that Pac-Man, right? That wasn't like
yeah,
a...
no, it was yes. literally Pac-Man. It was actually Pac-Man. It was
licensed character Pac-Man. Yeah,
licensed from Namco Bandai.
Namco will whore him out to anybody, so I mean that's not surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. But
I mean they even whored him out to Adam Sandler, so
exactly.
But the current Kamen Rider is like a Kamen Rider build is an interesting thing. It has big ideas and like some really clever and interesting concepts, but it isn't doing very well at executing them. Like
it's trying so
I think
hard.
It's trying really
what,
hard.
What is the actual hook on build?
So like, the hook is 10 years before the event of the show, mankind went to Mars and brought back a mysterious cube, which is definitely not Trouble, and that's why they called it Pandora's Box. And when they opened the box, Japan was split into three portions by a huge wall they call the Sky Wall. So now Japan is three separate kingdoms.
It's topical.
Toto, Saito, and Hokuto. and so, like, the show is basically about, like, a battle between these three kingdoms through the proxies of Kamen Riders. And it's...
Is it like a Warring States period thing, or is it just...
Kind of.
It's really...
Like, there's a lot of stuff happening, you know. Like, there's like...
I was just kind of interested if it was like a... Like a one-word hook, like this one's about cars, this one's about fruit, that kind of thing. But it's
the thing is, Kamen Rider is not that easy. Sentai is that easy, but Kamen Rider never is.
Yeah, like even though Kamen Rider is still relatively simplistic, like Aqua says, the hooks tend to be a bit more complicated. So there's like this one is about a battle in a mirror world, or like this one is about time traveling monsters who grant your wishes and stuff like that. You know,
this one is about a detective who can turn fuse with a guy who is human Google, and it's not gay at all.
Yeah. But. You know, there's a lot of stuff here. Like, they seem to be trying to tell a war story, but also offer, like, some tranchant political commentary about modern-day Japan, and also tell, like, this strong personal story about, like, change and transformation, and also tell a science fiction story about, like, alien powers and stuff like that. And
also teach kids about science.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And also sell a lot of toys and stuff. And so the net result is it's sort of a huge mess of a show, you know, like where
sounds
it's
ambitious.
It is, you know.
A couple of weeks ago, I actually compared it to a original Sunrise mecha anime. And that is the most apt comparison I can think of because it is
exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
Complete train wreck. So it's like Buddy Complex or Valve Rave or like that kind of stuff.
Or Code Geass.
Oh, goddamn it.
But the ideas are there, but it just sort of keeps barreling out of control. Like, it's even more than most toku shows, you know, it has no sense of tone or mood or setting. You know, it'll veer wildly from comedy to drama to tragedy and back again, and like the actors they've got aren't really up to the story they're trying to tell, not even in very broad toku terms. And so the net result is kind of like a fascinating slow motion car crash. You know, the ideas are great. There are individual scenes which are excellent. Occasionally it will surprise you and delight you with like an unexpected twist or a cool reveal. But the overall effect is very disjointed. And like it's interesting but not good, if that makes any sense.
Right.
You know.
So a little more ambitious than they're capable of delivering on.
Definitely, you know. They're trying to deliver so many different ideas, but they can't blend them in an interesting way. Like one of the most distinctive aspects about Kamen Rider Gaim, which we keep coming back to, is that unlike most toku shows, it managed to juggle multiple plot lines well and build them organically. Because the thing about toku shows is that even though they are incredibly long running shows, they don't tend to feel it. They never use their running time. Every episode is a frantic race to the finish. You know, they are never paced well. And some of that problem is coming through here. You know, the problem that there has to be a fight every episode because that's what the kids want to see. You know, the problem that every episode has to have a sweet new power-up or toy that can be hawked to the audience. You know, sometimes that can be integrated into a story relatively organically. Here they're having trouble with it, and it definitely throws off what was already quite a rocky script, you know. And
it definitely doesn't have the suit working in its favor, though, because like something like Gaim, the thing with like Gaim had, let's say, two big power-ups, right? He had a power-up after like 20 episodes and one after 40 episodes. And this fit within the character arc, right? Whenever the character has a big revelation or a turnaround or a catharsis, then you get a new power-up. Build has 50 different power-ups.
Right, like,
he has
here's a new one, here's a new one, here's a new one,
episode.
Here's a new combination of the old ones.
Yeah.
So you can't have him have an interesting character moment every single time he gets a new power-up. So he ends up just pulling them out of his ass. We're at the point where he, like, activates a new form, and we're like, have we seen this before? We don't think so, but they don't treat it like it's anything important at all.
And I think, like Aquagay said, the best Sentai and the best Kamen Rider shows take their kind of like commercial origins and use them as like important marking points in the story. So a new power-up should be like a big moment for a character. You know, it should be a
should be Goku going Super Saiyan.
It should be a triumphant ass-kicking moment, you know, and the problem is, in recent shows, and this has affected Super Sentai as well, although because there's less story to begin with in Super Sentai, the net effect is less. There's so many power-ups that A, working them all into the plot becomes a problem, and B, there's not really any sense of elation when they're used. And this is a problem which has affected Build a great deal, you know. The power-ups are very unimaginative, you know, it's not cool. And, like, half the point of watching these shows is to see, like, cool fights and cool poses and, like, monsters exploding and stuff.
Are you saying Smartphone Wolf is not
cool? I'm saying Smartphone Wolf is not cool. It's dumb. And not in the good way either. And
like, the show... Is that another thing that sounds is exactly what it sounds like?
So, Build's gimmick is that he has two halves and he can combine the two halves. Each half has a different power up. So it's worth pointing out that A, this gimmick is cribbed directly from Kamen Rider Double. It is literally exactly the same gimmick. And
assuming
B,
that's why the title is Double.
Yes, correct.
Except in Double it made sense because Double was two guys in one. Yes. So one guy is the left half and the other one is the right
half. Also, there were 8 power ups in Double total across the series. Here we see 8 power-ups in one episode. Ugh. You know, it's too much, and like it's beginning to negatively affect the quality of the show, which is disappointing, you know, because the best Kamen Rider shows have always been able to subvert their, you know, their base origins and produce something that's actually interesting as well as being a commercial for toys. And this just is having trouble with that, you know, like the story they're trying to tell isn't very good in the first place, and then it's undermined further by their need to have obligatory fights and obligatory power-ups and stuff like that. You know, it's all very, like I said, disjointed, which is a shame because I like some of the characters, I like some of the ideas there. It's interesting, at least, which is more than I can say for some other shows, you know, like they're trying, and who knows, we could see a big improvement in the back half.
Yeah, halfway in.
I mean,
yeah.
they have reached what appears to be a new status quo, which might be the kicking off point for a more coherent story. But as it is, it's just sort of a mess.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll hopefully turn around through the second half. If not, then at least you know there's definitely a new one right after it, right? So
yep,
that's kind of the beauty, you know, like even if this one is bad, you know, you wait a year or so, there'll be something brand new and fresh to kick off.
Roll the dice again. All right, so indeed. One last thing that just came to mind, I'm trying to remember, what was the series with the anime nerd rangers, the what was it, Akiba Ranger or something? What's the deal with that?
Akiba Ranger.
So Akiba Ranger is a really interesting fringe case. So Akiba Ranger was an official Super Sentai series produced by Toei. So by the team that makes proper Super Sentais. But it was explicitly aimed at adults and kind of a loving parody of actual Super Sentai. So it was a Sentai show that parodied Sentai shows, if that makes sense. But with the advantage of official backing. So like you had actual old Rangers showing up and like official suits, all that kind of stuff. And
was it a full length series?
It was 13 episodes and then a second series that was also 13 episodes. So okay. It was produced much more like a traditional show rather than a year long extravaganza.
Not part of the regular Super Sentai was going on at the same time, right?
Yes, that's correct. There were normal Super Sentai shows happening at the same time. And for what it's worth, it is not included in the canon of Super Sentai shows, although it was produced by Toei and is an official show. And it was very odd because you'd think that making a parody Super Sentai show was the easiest thing in the world, but they chose not to go the easy way, and instead they made it a deeply weird meta commentary on like storytelling and production and all sorts of very, very odd things. Like Aqua can probably explain it a little bit better than me, since he was a bigger fan of that show there.
Well, they were all like anime nerds, right? Wasn't that
they were Sentai nerds. They were Sentai nerds was the idea. So they were all big fans of Sentai who magically became Sentai themselves was the big hook.
And there are a lot of episodes that are just takes on stock Sentai tropes. Like in every Sentai there's an episode where a monster becomes good, and then like the Rangers will try to find out like why is this monster going good? Is it actually good or not? And Akiba Ranger always had like the very like, I think nowadays it is a bit stale, but back when that show aired, I found it relatively fresh that they like look at things from like, oh, this is that trope and that's this trope. That means we have to do this, but actually things turn out to be the other way around because of course this is the real world and not the Sentai world. But I think like the ending of that show is just sort of what elevates in my vision, where it's basically the standard, like, we realize that we're in a show and rebel against the writer.
Animagatari.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
I was just remembering it as we were talking, because that was kind of the other show I remember crossing over into the anime fandom for a hot minute there, and it kind of, I think everybody forgot about it again, but...
I mean,
but the thing with Akiba Ranger's meta stuff is that it also gives an insight into how Toku is made. Like they keep hearing the words Hate Saburo. It's like, oh yeah, this is the guy. This is our creator. But then it turns out Hate Saburo is actually just the pseudonym used by the Toei staff as the creator of Sentai. There is no Hate Saburo. He is just Toei. He's
the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Yes, basically. Or he's, you know, he's Alan Smithy. Okay. Yes. You know, so like, I mean, the thing that Akiba Ranger also was created for is that it proves that even in Japan, there is a sizable adult fan base for Sentai and for Toku. And this was produced to appeal directly to those people. You know, which makes it a fascinating curio, you know, because it is a show about adults liking a show for children, and that was like an integral part of the weird humor that show had, and like part of the reason why it sort of faded away was that the second season was nowhere near as good as the first season.
Yeah, it was just basically just like standard otaku bait humor.
Yeah.
One interesting thing about Akiba Ranger is that voice actress Maya Uchida, who voices amongst others Rika in Chunibyo, was the mentor of the Akiba Rangers. So she plays the mentor of the Akiba Ranger as a live action role, but she also plays like the main character's favorite anime character, and who is also like the figure of that anime character is their morpher. So it's just kind of like I just remember stuff seeing on a gazillion different levels.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a lot of like hilarious out of context screen caps from that that kind of caught my eye.
I mean, probably the episode of that show everybody remembers is where history is changed so that America invented tokusatsu. So Power Rangers are the original ones.
Which is oddly enough a second season episode.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the kind of like weird meta stuff that it played with, you know, like at its best, Akiba Ranger kind of played with the fandom's knowledge of the product, you know. And by the way, those anime girl morphers, of course, were real things that you could buy for ridiculous amounts of money. Because
and their giant robot is an Itasha.
You could buy a toy of for a ridiculous amount of money. Course. So yeah, like Akiba Ranger was kind of like the snake eating its own tail, you know, but it's kind of like a fascinating glimpse into like an alternate universe where like Toei acknowledges and understands the idea of adult Sentai fans, because one of the most important things about like Sentai and Toku in general is that it is completely 100% sincere. Right. Like it is never nodding and winking, you know. It is always 100% sincere in what it is trying to do, even if what it is trying to do is blatantly laughable. And like
so that kind of makes a series like the Akiba Ranger kind of unique then.
Absolutely, you know. And also it was a rare kind of like glimpse behind the scenes somewhat, because it's a kid's show, there's like no making ofs or behind the scenes stuff, and because it's a Japanese show, like all of the staff very much stay on message and there's no tell-alls or anything like that. So Akiba Ranger was like a fascinating asterisk on the end of Super Sentai, and like I didn't necessarily like it as much, but it was a really interesting thing that they tried to do.
Right. Okay, well that seems like a good place to stop then. Any parting thoughts before we wrap things up?
Never look at monsters when they explode. You should always turn your back on exploding monsters. That's one of the rules.
Oh, right. Yes, that seems like wise life advice there. And I will look up Starfish Hitler later. Yes.
Also, another cardinal rule of tokusatsu, if you're good, then when you die, you will dissolve into light. But if you are evil, you will explode. It's an easy way to tell if people are good or evil.
I just want to shout out... I just want to shout out Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad, which was that was Ultraman, right? Gridman.
I think so.
Which came over the 90s, and now Trigger is making an anime adaptation of that at some point.
Yeah, it's Gridman. Not Ultraman.
But it was an Ultraman series, I believe.
I mean, congratulations, you are the only person who has ever shouted out Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad on anything.
Okay, yeah. So
that's what people come here for, the deep cuts, for sure.
That's my story. When Trigger announced that show, I was the only person in the entire auditorium who knew that it came over in the 90s as Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad.
All right, well, we'll keep an eye out for that.
Aqua.
Aqua, did you have anything before we
Fuck DVD Horn, watch Overtime.
Once again, the Glorian blog does not endorse anyway.
Miami Mike, I know what you did at Dragon Con.
I don't even want to ask about that. All right, so let's
coffee touchy.
Thanks guys for breaking it down on there. Very interesting stuff.
Indeed.
Let's just wrap things up with some housekeeping. You can read everything that we do on theglorioblog.com, probably where you saw this, but just in case, everything that we write about anime and tokusatsu is there. You can follow us on Twitter at theglorioblog. You can please leave us a rating or subscribe on iTunes or the iOS podcast.
Like, comment, and subscribe.
You know, another podcast I listened to suggested that their readers go to their local Apple store and subscribe on all the display devices. I'm not necessarily going to officially encourage anyone to do that, but just saying that thought that was
okay. So
I thought that was pretty.
Well, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow.
The next Sentai, monster is going to be one who goes into Apple stores.
See, that's what the kid. That's pretty relevant with the kids these days. That's
way too evil for a Sentai monster. That's an actual monster.
All right, guys. So let's we'll call it a day there, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take it easy, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.